Well, this one day sitting is to launch our Ango period, our practice period, one more. Year after year, we set some time aside. Very, very old tradition going back to the rainy season in India, where you really can't hardly do anything because it rains so much and so hard. And so they just, the monks and nuns gathered together in one place and spent time together with the teacher. That tradition traveled all the way through China to Korea and Cambodia and finally to Japan, where Dogen carefully wrote down exactly how to do it. It's enormously elaborate in his way. It assumes that everybody comes to stay for 3 months in the summertime, which is a very hot, steamy, humid time in Japan. And so they're in the cool of the monastery the whole time. And the elaborations of even getting there, you have to go ahead of time and have tea with the abbot. And then when you do go, you have to sign in a very elaborate way, and then they put little signs up to tell what different things are, and you have tea with this person, and you offer incense to this thing, and it goes on for a long time. And then they all sit together. And then at the end, it's the same. They have this elaborate ceremony of closing the Ango period, with more little notes being posted for various things, and more little teas being drunk with each other, and all of those things. So it's a very communal get together for monks that usually either have their own temple or they're doing something entirely different. I met several people in Japan whose jobs were one to teach English in high school. One was to be a pharmacist. Well, he was a pharmacist most of the time. But they got time off and they came for 6 weeks, I think they do in Japan now. Not Dogen's long, long way, unless you live in a monastery. And it becomes a kind of expression of Sangha, that just the coming and going of everyday life doesn't offer. So our way to accommodate our coming and going is to meet like this to start, a day of sitting, and then end with a week of sitting. And in between, to modify our lives as much as we can, and dedicate more of our time and maybe our space to our practice. Our practice as we practice in the Zendo, so meaning more sitting, maybe reciting a scripture after our sit, learning the Heart Sutra in Sino-Japanese. It's possible. We don't dictate what anybody is supposed to do. There isn't any supposed to do kind of thing here, which leaves it all up to each one of us to decide how to create our own practice period. It's called in English a peaceful life. So the essence of it is just to create or recreate a life of peace around ourselves, and to be peace ourselves, to find to study ways of being peace, and to study ways that peace has been discovered in ancient times, in farther away times from here. Meaning you could be reading the teachings of some Zen master or some Christian mystic or some commentary on the Torah, or it's really very open, but it's about self-discovery. And I think that's the main thing, is to, instead of letting the world define us as much as it does, to discover our own definition of who we are, and to let that be the truth of us, our own particular being. We can't be unconditioned beings, but we can see our conditioning and see through it, so that we're not sold by it, so that we don't have to believe everything that we've been told to believe about ourself and who we are and what we are. And although we work toward that in our practice, this is an opportunity to make it our particular subject. And that's my recommendation, is to make the study of the self that Dogen talks about and that Uchiyama Roshi talks about so much, the study of the self, and Zazen practice itself, as our study, because they go together, they are the same. I've been reading a lot of Dogen lately. I started by looking up what Kaz translates as King Samadhi. It's called Zamai Ozamai, which just means samadhi, special samadhi, or the best samadhi. And they talk about ocha, meaning very highly respected tea, or o-rice, or o-water even, that you elevate something as saying this is very, very particular, pay attention. So samadhi, o samadhi, is what it is about. And he has a quote from Shakyamuni Buddha. When you sit in the meditation posture, you realize samadhi in body and mind and give rise to an awesome virtue that people respect. Like the sun illuminating and refreshing the world, this sitting removes obscurities from the mind and lightens the body so that exhaustion is set aside. Enlightenment becomes as natural as a dragon curled up at rest. A demon is frightened even by a picture of someone sitting in the meditation posture. How much more so by a living person who realizes the way, sitting motionless and at ease. Therefore, you should sit in meditation posture. Some outsiders try to practice by standing on tiptoes, others by standing continuously, and still others by adopting the yoga posture of hooking their feet over their shoulders. These people develop unbalanced minds that flounder in an ocean of delusion because their postures are unnatural. Why do I teach my disciples to sit up straight in the meditation posture? Because it's easy to regulate the mind when the body is upright. If the body is straight, the mind is not dull. Instead, the mind is forthright. The intention is true, and mindfulness is present. If the mind scatters or the body leans, gather together your body, mind, and resume the upright posture. If you want to manifest samadhi and enter it, you should gather together all distracted thought and scattered mind within this posture. Practice in this way, and you will manifest and intimately enter the king of samadhis. So it's what I said on Tuesday night. It's about creating from our own life, from our own life and practice, a holding place. One that's forthright, direct, authentic, and honest. It's not about being special. It's not about trying to talk about this practice with others because they won't understand, or trying to lay a trip on anybody because they won't get it, but just to be as ordinary and natural and aware, self-aware, as possible. In an upright and forthright way. So Suzuki Roshi talked often about posture and said it's not just about sitting on the cushion that should be straight, but sitting and reading should be that way. And slicing onions in the kitchen should be that way. We should always have a posture that is totally present and forthright wherever we are. For those of us with suffering backs, this is difficult. And the instruction to be relaxed, or in Buddha's words, to be at ease, are very important. It's not about being rigid. It's not even about being straight if we can't be straight. I see my back going like that, the way my mother's did and her mother's did. So I think straight back is getting less and less possible, but as straight as possible, certainly. Without rigidity, without strain. Stress is killing everybody. Stress is like putting your feet around your neck, trying to do too much. We don't need to do too much. Just enough. Just enough. So I hope not only do all of us do our own personal practice period, which is what we mostly end up doing except for Tuesday night, but also to find ways of being with each other and talking about what you're doing in your practice period. And making it part of the community as well, in the old way that was done in ancient times. We encourage each other because we do talk each other's language. We do understand each other and what we're going through. And we need that understanding. It's very, very helpful. And we reflect for each other in that way. have been trying to think of a subject for the talks during Sesshin, and I, as far as I've come, is just this combination of self and practice. What it is to be a self. What it is to be practicing and studying and forgetting the self, so that all things are practicing with us. We don't practice alone, although it feels like a very lonely exercise sometimes. And it's important that we work toward being with others in a way that brings practice into focus and into reality. It's just one more cheap idea until we are enacted by it. It's an expression of life itself as we live it, each one of us. So, although I hope you do read something or some things and learn from them and maybe memorize something, I hope what you find most inspiring and what you focus most on is what is underneath the words, and that you return over and over to the peace and the quiet of your own existence and find help and support in creating a peaceful life and a peaceful place. I think we're all here for each other. We're all eager to help each other. And we can offer each other the opportunity. We can reach out. Dogen said, sitting in meditation posture is leaping over the heads of demons and becoming a true person inside the Buddha ancestor's room. I like that. It is to transcend the deepest, most intimate teachings of Buddha ancestors. It's to transcend the teachings. Sitting in meditation posture is a forthright body, a forthright mind, a forthright body mind, a forthright Buddha ancestor, and a forthright life stream. Buddha's lifetime guidance is contained within it, within you. Nothing is lacking. And that's what I'd like to leave you with today. Nothing is lacking. Very short talk, time for questions. Wendy?
Well, reflecting on the list that I sent out about suggestions for anger, it seems like some of the things on the list don't quite fit into the kind of practice you just described.
Which ones?
Like preparing for sesshin.
That can be a very peaceful process, too.
Well, I... possibly. I'll try to make it that way.
Yeah.
It would take a look something else. I mean, in itself, it doesn't lead to peace.
No, it's your own intention that leads to peace.
Right.
Whatever hits us, it hits us. Whatever comes for us to do is what we have to do. But then how we do it is up to us. So it can either be, oh, I can't do this, it's too much, blah, you know, which you don't do anyway. But taking this into focus, placing it in focus, and really making it a conscious effort, you begin to find ways of making it more peaceful. Mm-hmm. And that's the...
True.
It doesn't have to be perfect. I mean, if you freak out, you freak out. But the intention is to find ways that are easier on yourself so you can be more yourself.
Well, it's not... You aren't thinking of yourself. You're thinking of everybody else.
Yes, but you have to think of yourself first in order to be able to deal with everybody else. Mm-hmm. Calm it all down first, and then you're open for them. Oh, come in. Come into my room. Thank you.
Is there a low response or a lot of people signed up?
Samya could probably say that better than I. I don't know what a lot is. This is the first time I do this position.
Oh, okay. Usually it's 10 to 15. It could do the whole thing.
You mean how many people are coming?
Yeah.
Well, we've had more than that. We've had up to 25.
Oh, right. Well, I just misunderstood. I thought maybe Wendy was saying, oh, nobody's signing up for the session.
See, I think Wendy takes care of pretty much everything, even if the Advil has expired. Like a month expired, she'll know. And if our supplies of papers, if there's only 3 pencils versus 10, she will know.
That's fine.
And if there's no pencils, how can we write notes to each other? So she pretty much covers everything.
Oh,
I think that's what she's talking about.
Worrying about the details.
Yes.
I haven't gotten there yet.
No. Now, you mentioned it in the email.
How to get all the work and the arrangements done and everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm playing a minor role this year that I insert myself in different ways.
Well, I almost have a question for her every day.
Okay.
So she does a lot.
Okay, then I'm not going to worry. I my own schedule is strange that.
So you'll be emailing me when you email. I will be.
I don't know if I'll be able to do much more than show up one day on the weekend. It's hard to know because of my work situation at that particular point in time. Maybe I can squeeze it. You know, I'll try. I definitely want to make an appearance and practice as best I can. Thank you.
A good number have already signed up.
Yeah,
though, haven't
they? That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
We certainly have enough.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. And even if you didn't get enough, you could still have it.
Oh, I've done that.
You know, it is what it is.
You just go and sit and see what happens. Ellie?
This is a little off the track of what we're talking about, but only in terms of my own process right now am I bringing it up. But I remember reading in Uchiyama Roshi's book about the two kinds of eyes that I think he's talking about, human eyes and Buddha's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Buddha's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking a lot about that and trying to understand I'm so moved sometimes by all the efforts that I see people making around me, dear friends who might be in pain or struggling in some way, or just making a really wonderful effort that nobody may actually be recognizing or know about.
Mm-hmm.
And even little plants that I see on my walks.
Struggling.
Struggling.
Yeah.
And animals and birds and the drought. And I just, you know, I'm wanting to understand that some eyes, Buddha's eyes, are watching and protecting all of us.
When he talks about Buddha ancestors, he means the ones who came before us. They're not gone. It's all still here. That's why it is the way it is, and you are the way that you are. So even though it's very sad and touching, it isn't terrible.
Well, it's more than I understand that the suffering part of it is hard to witness, but it's more that I just want to believe that even the little effort of a flower to bloom is somehow recognized and is part of the whole part of the whole thing.
Yes.
And the flower dies, and that, you know, you said the other night about a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh that we're all rose bushes. That's or roses.
Yeah.
I can see that. I mean, how the roses bloom and die, and the gardenias where I walk, there's a huge I always think of you, a huge bank of gardenias, and they bloom and then they die and they bloom, and then all winter they're kind of quiet and then they come again. So
yeah.
I know sometimes I overcome with sadness, and that's not really what this is about so much as just kind of wanting to believe or wanting to see that there's some recognition, some, you know, big eye that's looking down on all of those efforts.
Well, they are the eye itself.
They are.
There isn't any other big eye.
It's in them then.
It's in them.
The eye is in them.
They are it.
Okay. I guess I'm wanting to, I'm sort of, this is my magical thinking that there's some big eye looking down on all of us.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think that's what Buddha's eye is.
Okay. Buddha's eye is in the gardenia itself.
And in you.
Okay.
I was just going to say that, you know, just having you say what you just said, and the way you said it with just tenderness, it's like, okay, what am I missing? I got to go on a walk and see that flower you're talking about. You know, just the awareness that you have is the eye, the way you said it. It makes other people in your life, if you're walking and you stop and you look at the gardenia and the, you know, I think somebody else will see that, well, I gotta look too and pay attention.
Well, you
so if I may say, to me, you were the eye right now.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
But you are too. Every time you bring in a gardenia, or
I'm selfish. Or I like
or a tree.
Yeah.
That's any consolation.
Yeah.
My gardenia bush bloomed for the first time. Pretty good, and I got like 10 or 15 gardenias. They're not quite as robust as that one. They're not in the ground.
Well, that's why I say.
So it's a good year for gardenias. I think they like this type of weather.
That's what I say about the self. It's so much bigger than we imagine. When Suzuki Roshi talks about the big self and the small self, the small is pretty small, and the big self is bigger than we can even guess. So you could say, you can't say anything is looking down. It's all inherent.
Mm-hmm.
And impossible to characterize because it's alive.
And the light is in everything. The light exists, I guess. It's not shining down. If you use the sun as a metaphor for that looking down thing, it,
yes,
it is, but then everything has a light of its own, its
yes,
own energy.
Yes. Yes, each one of us is full of that energy, that sun energy, you could say. Yeah.
Remember the spiritual, the Christian spiritual, I don't remember all the words, but his eyes on his sparrow.
Mm.
You know, so if you're a Christian, you believe in a God, and if you're discouraged, it's, I think at one point, at the end, his eye is on the sparrow. Why wouldn't he look after you?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the Christian realm,
mm-hmm,
to me it's very comforting that there's really nothing to worry about if you just remember that.
Yeah.
And that's true in Buddhism too.
Yeah. If he looks at the sparrow, he's going to be watching us too.
Mm-hmm. Which means there are times when we weep for those who are suffering, because it's, and the more we practice, the more aware we become of other suffering,
mm-hmm,
so that even a small thirsty tree is suddenly feels very strongly in us that we wouldn't even have noticed before. And in terms of all the refugees that are pouring into Europe, and my friend Heinrich is trying to practice his practice by helping PTSD Syrian refugees in Germany.
Oh, wonderful.
One of my students dedicates her morning practice to all the refugees in the world right now. We can't do anything much, but we can certainly dedicate our intention toward them. That's Jane, by the way. Jane Jasper. Made copies of this. Those first two paragraphs, looking at them now, I'm not as impressed as I was when I copied them out, but I will share them with you. I have something to take home. think we should all be like dragons curled up like rest. Is there anything else? It's probably enough. Okay. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.